Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Lexington, Kentucky, and let's hope that we're live.
I hope so. I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for August 10th, 2011, episode 203, sponsored today by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us and being patient enough to come back the day after we have some technical problems on the end of Blog Talk Radio. So we are here. Hopefully, we are being heard. We'll just
well,
know that
Jamie,
we are.
I just checked, and we are, and Rick Connolly already chimed in this morning and said, we hear you. So thank
Yay!
You, Rick, for yesterday letting
Yay.
Us know that we weren't on the air. And Rick was there telling us every step of the way what was going on. So.
Rick is our tech guru. Thank you very much, Rick, for keeping us up to date. We don't even know what's going on. So I wanted to talk to you guys real quick about a video. I think I'm going to try to get Jen to post it on our Facebook page right now. And this is a video of, let's see here. Do I need to post a link to it, Glenn, or can Jennifer?
Jennifer's going to post a link. You can't post directly to this video, Jennifer, so just post a link.
Oh, okay. I did see it on somebody else's feed. But anyway, it's a video of a horse and a rider at a horse trial. And you people, please do not miss this video. Do not, because this is a video of a woman. This is actually kind of a nightmare, but it all turned out okay. This is a video of a horse running away with a girl. Apparently, at some point on the cross-country course, her bit broke, just broke in half, and the horse runs. Now, the common thing that a horse would do would be to run a little bit and then come to a stop. What does this horse do? Dear God. He keeps going and starts jumping jumps and jumping things that are not.
Oh, my God. I don't think that was part of the course, was it? I'm just watching the video for the first time here.
No,
this horse jumped a freaking car over the top.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And then bolts like a bat out of hell. Oh my God, she is flying. We're talking racehorse flying.
Yeah.
Oh, and she almost hits whatever those red things. Oh. She is lucky she didn't get dumped around that one turn. Wow. That's scary.
Yeah, and apparently they ask her why she didn't just jump off I mean, at this point, at the beginning of the video, she's gone. She's trying to pull one rein. It's just not even there. Somebody jumps out and waves their arms, trying to get her to stop. The horse just barrels past them. Now, mind you, there's also people, like, walking around and grazing horses and doing their course, and this horse just takes off and flies over the car. Apparently, the car was also incredibly dented on the roof, so it didn't clear the car.
Oh, it did hit the roof? It looked like he cleared it.
I know. Yeah, apparently they scratched it.
Oops.
Oh, my God. And then they just take off galloping. I mean, it is just out of control. And they asked her why she didn't jump off, because she was wearing an air vest. You know, when the point is,
are you kidding? That horse is doing 40 miles an hour.
Exactly. There's no way I'd give me to jump off one of those.
You're going to break something, air vest or not. You're going to break your head or your arm or your leg. Something's breaking.
Yeah. And any of us who have tried the emergency voluntary dismount at speeds like that, and I did try it, there are some serious downsides. Yeah. Serious.
Yeah. I tell my
air vest
students,
or not.
I'm like, don't ever bail, because bailing is a guaranteed hurt. You know, I said, but if you stay on, you might be okay. You might get him to stop. But if you don't, you're definitely going to get hurt.
Yeah, if she had bailed, she'd be laying around with her leg up with Helena, you know, in the same state.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
She stayed on for the whole ride, because it cuts off. You don't see the whole wild ride.
Yeah, the horse went all the way back to its stall at this horse show. This is it. This is CIC 2-star. So this is really, I mean, these jumps are huge. And this is a really talented horse and rider, obviously. Incredibly talented horse. I mean, my God.
Sign that baby up for Rolex next year. Oh, my gosh.
No doubt. No doubt.
Clearing
yeah,
a 5-foot car.
They came to a stop at his stall in the barn at the horse show. So they both were unhurt, amazingly enough, but the car was the only thing that suffered the most damage.
Oh, yeah, you know what? It looks like he drug his back feet over the car. Put a nice scratch right across the top, I'm sure.
Yep.
So, incredible. That's a good video of the day. Good find there, Jamie. Good find.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. I actually saw that on Katie Murphy's page. Katie Murphy, who is our eventing couple dating Roger, the non-horse guy. So that's where I actually saw the video first. And it was very – but she didn't post it. It was a mistake. I'm like, they had a car on the cross-country course? That doesn't seem normal, but maybe it's in Europe. I don't know.
Well, it looks like our magic couple is still planning on getting married, because she was talking about shopping for engagement rings.
Ooh, we got to call her.
Good.
We got to get this update.
I know. We do need an update. I don't know if Jennifer has her phone number or not, or if she's listening, give us a call. But she said that shopping for engagement rings just got a lot more unfun. And we kind of asked her why, and she responded and said, too many people with thoughts, expense, and pressure. Ridiculous. We went from the need from no ring to being told that 1 carat is just right. I think that 1 carat for us is ludicrous. So I think that their family has jumped into the equation. And our advice to you, Katie, is screw the family. Get what you want. Do what you want. They're not the ones that have to live with it for their entire life.
Yeah, you know what I did that kind of messed up? Chad and I were looking online when we were going to get my engagement ring, and I wanted something kind of smaller and lower profile because of riding. And so I picked one out online, and that was fine and everything. Well, then later on, I found one that was not a diamond. It was this just kind of interesting-looking stone in a beautiful setting, just like kind of like a rhinestone kind of thing, but it wasn't red. It was like a tannish color. I don't know what it was, like amber almost. And I fell in love with this ring, and I was like, and it was so cheap. So cheap, so you don't have to get a diamond. Well, the bad part is Chad had already bought the engagement ring, and here I was going, look at this ring, I love it, I love it, I love it. I put it as a screensaver on the computer just to be subtle. I mean, poor guy. It's like, that's beautiful. Yeah, we'll have to, I'll have to call him and see about it. Maybe, you know, we'll see. And poor guy had already bought the engagement ring. And so, of course, I love my engagement ring more than anything in the world, but it was definitely me being kind of a pain in the butt about it. No girl is easy, and Roger, you should know that. No family is easy. Planning a wedding is going to be worse than buying an engagement ring, so just get used to it. It's training.
Training.
I'm so positive.
Hey, Jennifer, what's coming up today?
On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition. We will be heading out to Saratoga to visit with Mucho Macho Man's owners, Patty and Dean Reeves. Let's see what it's like to be a racehorse and racehorse owner after the party that is the Triple Crown is over. Do they still have a hangover? Next up, Black Beauty will continue to trot around London calling out offenders and advising ill-doers and generally making the whole of England a better place to live. And it's the Horse.com's Horse Health Report today, and will Glenn regret not having breakfast this morning? Stay tuned.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. And do you have a Daily Winnie, Jamie?
I actually do.
Okay, you go first.
This is a first, and if he is listening, I'm sure he's going to be honored. This is one of the highest honors ever bestowed on Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. He is getting my daily
winner. Oh, wow. Well, wait a minute. Do that again. That was very good. That's probably the best I've ever heard that pronounced.
You've heard his name a lot. It's Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum. And he's getting my daily Winnie along with Zenyatta's baby daddy, Bernardini. Now, let me explain. Sheikh Mohammed purchased yesterday at the Saratoga yearling sale. He purchased 13 horses, including 6 horses, 6 yearlings, by Bernardini for $8.3 million over the 2 nighttime sessions. That accounted for more than one-fourth of the sale's $32.9 million in gross proceeds. He bought both of the highest-priced horses, a $1.2 million colt by Bernardini, a $1.2 million colt by Medaglio de Oro, and he also bought a colt by Street Cry for $625,000. In addition to the 6 Bernardini colts bought by Sheikh Mohammed, this is Zenyatta's baby daddy, okay? She's bred to this horse. 7 other yearlings by Bernardini sold for a total of $7.75 million, an average of $544,000 apiece, making him the leading sire at the sale. Could you imagine how much Zenyatta's baby would sell for? Oh,
I
my
know.
Gosh.
And guess who's buying him?
Nobody.
No. If somebody's buying him, Sheikh Mohammed is.
Oh, yeah. Do you think for one second that those rich millionaire people are going to sell Zenyatta's baby? Not
no.
a shame. Not
unless,
a
of course,
chance.
He comes up and offers them a large amount of money, which is entirely possible.
I don't even think they would do that. But you have to understand that Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum also owns Bernardini, and he owns Street Cry. So two of the horses, and he basically kind of padded his own horses just to make his horse the best one at the sale. But by God, the guy comes over here and he puts his money into America, you know? So I can't fault him. I love it when the sheikhs go to the sales because everybody wins. And he opens up that pocketbook.
And as everybody knows, the last couple of years, the sales have been dismal. So this is a good thing, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely is. So that is my daily win.
Well, my Daily Winnie is more of just an announcement, I think. I don't think it's really a Daily Winnie at all. But I want to let everybody know that for those of you now listening live and are using a player that you click on from the Internet, whether it's from our site or one of our affiliate sites, you'll probably notice that when you click and the little window pops up with the player, that it is a different player today. And I was able to figure out how to get it to actually show the last 5 episodes. So you'll be able to, in the little pop-up window, listen to the last 5 episodes, not just the current one. So the other player just had 1 episode. This one now has 5. So in the player itself, you don't even have to go back to the website anymore. You can listen to a week's worth of shows. So that was a little improvement that we made for your benefit, and I just wanted to let everybody know about it. Now, also, we talk about previews. Let's talk about previews a little bit. The show's coming out this week. Jennifer proofed the dressage show. One of us always listens to, either Jennifer and I listen to every show that goes out, make sure that the audio is correct and all that stuff. And Jennifer, you had a comment on the dressage show this morning after you listened to it. Tell us what that was.
Well,
it'll be out live tomorrow, by the way.
Tomorrow, yeah. This morning I listened to dressage, No, it wasn't 116. And Courtney King Dye was on because the entire show is all about para dressage. And Chris has some really interesting points of view. She has a judge on there. She has another rider who also does training and such. And Courtney King was on. She very recently announced that she's going to go and compete in the para dressage discipline. And it
let's
was really fun
everybody,
to hear.
Let's remind everybody real quick that Courtney King Dye was the, for those that don't know, she was the two of you in the world. She was the dressage rider, the Grand Prix level dressage rider that got hurt in an accident at her farm and sustained a severe head injury and is in recovery phase now. She's done an interview before in the Dressage Radio Show, and it was hard to listen to because she was at a point in her recovery that speech was very difficult. So, all right, sorry. I just thought we'd better clarify that.
Backstory. Well, it's been, what, probably a month or more since her
I think it's probably been two or three.
Two or three months? It was fun to hear the difference and the change in her voice because she's made great strides in her speech therapy. And more of Courtney's former pre-injury voice, and a lot more of her coming, you can hear it now, you know, you can really hear the emotion in her voice. It's really interesting to hear her point of view on para dressage and why she's going to compete there and why she, you know, made the decision stuff. It was really a very interesting interview. I enjoyed the whole show.
All right, cool. And you said you really, I know when you talked to me this morning, you were really, really impressed with the progress that she's made, that her speech is just coming so much easier, you thought.
Well, you can really, she really has the ability, the expression in her voice is back, and all the cute little quirky likes and ums that Courtney has always had are starting to come back. So that was really fun because I had listened to her first interview a couple of months back, and she had to put such great concentration on articulating her words. I still have to do that. But it was really fun to listen to that progression and how excited she is about getting back on the horses and getting into competitions again.
All right, and that'll be on the Dressage Radio Show. That'll come out tomorrow on Thursday. And don't forget, everybody, that our schedule this week is a little bit different. We are going to have a recorded show up there for you on Friday. We're going to be traveling to Philadelphia for the American Equestrian Trade Association Conference. Jamie's flying in. Jennifer and I are making the 11-hour trip. And we'll be up there recording some bits for some of the other shows. Plus, we'll be coming there live from there on Monday morning. That should be fun. You definitely don't want to miss Monday's show. And what else? Oh, Really Bad Ads has been moved to tomorrow. So get your Really Bad Ads in today. This is your last chance to get them in. And you, if you are selected as the best Really Bad Ad, you will win the first ever Horse Radio Network saddle pad. And that'll be something to cherish. So you definitely want to be the first one to win that. So that's Really Bad Ads. Get them into Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com today. So get to Craigslist and start looking around.
I will tell you that you must get me a saddle pad. That is the coolest giveaway for any radio station I've ever worked at, okay? And we've given away cars, and I think that this is cooler. When have I ever been able to give away a saddle pad? I mean, come on. It's awesome. So,
not to mention a Horse Radio Network saddle pad with our really cool logo.
Right. I know. That's what I'm saying. It's like we're sponsored by Horse Radio Network. I love it. Now, I do have
Jamie,
to...
Jamie, we will make sure that you get one.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
And I want to throw in here that we'll also make sure that Rebecca Kloppen gets one because she posts on our page almost every day. So, Rebecca, yeah, we are going to make sure you get a saddle.
Oh, good. She just bought a saddle. That's perfect.
Okay.
now, stop for a second because I have to tell you. Remember,
okay,
I mentioned yesterday a little bit about finding a horse on Craigslist while I was looking for really bad ads? And I actually found one that had some maybe potential.
Yeah, and you said it had potential for you, not one of your customers. And I said, what are you doing? Was that the conversation?
Well, yeah, that was the conversation. Well, I happened to go look at him last night.
Of course.
I went and visited. He was only like 10 minutes down the road. So I wanted to read their ad. and then I'm going to tell you what I found. So a lot of times when you do read the ads, things might be a little bit different from where you actually what you actually see. So the ad is thoroughbred gelding, 6 years old. And the ad is, I've only had this gelding for a month and a half. He's a little more than I wanted. He ties great. I've had him shot on all four. He loves a bath, and I've ridden him 5 or 6 times, no problems. He came to me in a 3-horse slant. Don't know if he loads in a 2-horse straight load. He is bay and 16-2 hands. He is beautiful and a lover to the right person. He loves attention. Don't have papers. He has a tattoo on his lip. Okay.
Well, that's all pretty straightforward.
So, yeah, pretty straightforward. No periods, all commas. So the entire thing is all commas. Anyway, doesn't matter because I go look at the horse, but I call him first. I call him after the show yesterday, and I'm like, hey, tell me about this horse. He's like, so what he actually told me was completely different than the ad because he told me he bought the horse for his, like, 9-year-old niece. Okay, again, 6-year-old thoroughbred, 16-2 hands. He bought this horse for his niece. It was way too much horse for her. She just had to have it. And I got him in the yard, but the problem is that when you ride him, he said that the horse runs backwards. He goes, as soon as you get on him, the horse runs backwards.
Oh, that's just the opposite of the one we saw in the video today.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, well, let me come look at him, because a lot of times running backwards is a simple training issue or something like that, or they've overbitted the horse. So I get out there and I look at him, and he also goes, oh, he's also got this small little bump on his knee. And I said, well, you know, that could potentially be a problem for me being an eventer. I kind of, you know, you're going to need to jump a lot. So we'll just check it out. It's only 10 minutes away. So Chad and I go out there last night. The bump on the knee, first of all, is a former slab fracture, which is very common in racehorses, unfortunately. And so the knee, actually, a little bump on the knee was more like a softball on the outside of the knee. Sadly, because the horse was so stinking cute, and he was so sweet, and he just lived in this half-acre backyard of sand. And so anyway, we look at the horse, and I look at him, and I'm like, let me check out his tattoo for you. I lift up the lip and the tattoo, and I'm like, oh, okay, this horse is not 6. He's 8, and he's also not 16.2 hands. He's actually 16 hands. Exactly how tall he was. And so he's 8 years old. He's 16 hands. He's like, well, that's what they told me. And I'm like, I believe you, because the guy was very straightforward about everything. And so I said, you know, let's go ahead and look at this bridle. I said, since I'm here, I might as well help the guy out, because he really had no idea. He was kind of one of those people that bought a horse and put him in their backyard and didn't really know much. And he was very honest about this. Like, I don't know very much. So he gets the bridle out. And I said, what kind of bit do you have? And he's like, oh, just a regular snaffle. And I thought, well, that's not really overbidding. And then he brings out the bridle, which is a Western bridle, which is not a snaffle. It is a snaffle with, like, 8-inch shanks on it, okay? So, like, this Western snaffle bridle with 8-inch shanks, and when you go to pull on that rein, I mean, it's going to drill him. And then I start looking at it even more. I'm like, this doesn't look right.
All right, don't tell me it's twisted wire.
No, it was on backwards, Glenn. A snaffle with 8-inch shanks on backwards. So not only is he pulling on the 8-inch shanks that are jabbing the horse in the mouth, it doesn't even, you know how snaffles, when you fold them correctly, they just kind of fold together. When they fold, when you fold them away, it makes like a V shape and will not go together. That's how the bit was in the horse's mouth, sitting there, was opposite. And then at the 8-inch shanks, oh, my God, the poor thing. So I'm like, dude, you know that running backwards thing you were talking about? I may have the reason why. Here's why. And I showed him, oh, my gosh. He was like, I had no idea. I had no idea it was on backwards.
Okay.
Thanks for the help.
This just goes back to our theory that there should be licenses to own a horse.
Yeah.
You should have to get training and have a license to even buy a horse in the first place.
Yeah, and unfortunately, his other horse was a mare, and he's like, I'm going to breed her next month. I'm like, wait.
There we go. We're going to grow up together.
Wait, you're going to breed her next month. That's September, so you should have your horse baby in about mid-July.
All right, here we go.
Green on green makes black and blue. Wouldn't ride that horse if I were you. It's like walking on a hot, tight wire. Dynamite too close to fire.
Now, I must tell you, you're exactly right, but I did leave, like, with, you know, just sick to my stomach. I felt
you didn't
so
buy
bad.
The horse, did you, with the knee the size
I
of
felt, I,
Rhode
no,
Island.
I did not. I did okay. not. And poor Chad, he just, the horse was, I mean, like, put his head on your shoulder kind of thing, like, please help me. Please help me. I just felt terrible for him because he's so cute. And I don't know if I can do this stuff like this. Oh, my gosh. It was just too hard to leave. I could barely stand it. But, you know, hopefully the horse is going to find a good home and somebody's going to come along who just wants a, you know, a little trail horse or something like that. He should be fine. He was sound at the walk. So, but I just, it just breaks your heart to see stuff like that. You know, what do you do? How do you handle it? When you see, like, okay, that's a good question of the day for our listeners is how do you handle, you know, what do you say to somebody? When I don't know how to word the question, Jennifer, you're better at this than I am, but, like, when you see somebody doing something very wrong with their horse, do you say something or do you just leave it as it is?
That's a perfect way to ask that question, I think. And you're right, it is tough. Now, you were in a situation where it almost, it almost allowed you to do it, but... You know, if you had seen the same thing at a boarding facility that you'd been visiting and it wasn't the person you were visiting, then what do? You know, it's even harder then. Huh.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I mean, it was hard enough for me to go, oh, dude. And then I was like, okay, do you have the horse on psyllium to get rid of all the sand that he's probably, you know, and I just was like, I could go on and on, but let's just get in the car. Let's just get in the car and go away because, first of all, I'm about to go bring the trailer back and save this poor little guy with a big old knee. I don't need one. So, anyway, that was
And you know what, time. Though? It's tough because you can't save them all, and there's always another one.
I know.
And you almost have to pick your – at least this horse was being fed. You know, it was probably being fed. He probably was over conscientious about that. He sounds like the kind of guy that did sort of care, just didn't know.
Yeah. He definitely had plenty of hay in the stall. Unfortunately, it was all, like, on top of the sand, you know. So I kind of talked to him a little bit about that.
Hay net, wonderful thing.
Huh?
A hay net, a wonderful thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Great
Rubber
invention.
Underneath the hay.
All right, let's do our commercial for the day. And then we're going to come back. We have our first guest coming up here, Patty Reeves of Mucho Macho Man fame. We're going to check in with them. And I don't know if Dean's going to be along or not, but they're up at Saratoga. Isn't there a big sale at the Saratoga, too?
It certainly is.
Yeah, I thought so. So we'll see if they're up there buying things or if Mucho Macho Man's up there and what's going on and just sort of get caught up with Patty and the gang from 3M. We'll be right back after this from our sponsor, Back on Track. And we have a lot more fun for you today.
Back on Track is a revolutionary line of pain relief products for horses and humans. Utilizing ancient Chinese experience, modern scientific findings, and skilled textile production, we have developed a line of products made of polyester fabric with ceramic powder melted into the threads. This ceramic-infused fabric reflects body heat as infrared waves, a form of energy that has a documented pain-relieving effect. It can reduce inflammation, ease muscle tension, increase blood circulation, and boost the healing process. Back on Track products can be used to warm up your muscles before exercise or work, thereby reducing the risk of strains or injury. Most importantly, they can also expedite the recovery from established injuries. Our wide range of products for horses includes blankets, coolers, saddle pads, boots, and wraps. We also offer a number of products for humans, including back and knee braces, gloves, bedding, and clothing. Back on Track is used by the top equestrians in the world, including McLean Ward, Stefan Peters, BZ Madden, Michelle Gibson, Margie Engel, and Debbie McDonald, just to name a few.
We've been using the Back on Track products now for approximately 4 years, starting with the leg wrap and the blankets. We've seen and noticed wonderful results from these products. We've no longer used poultice in our barn. The horses come out with much tighter legs, seem to have many less ailments, and the side effects of using poultice are not noticed, obviously, using the Back on Track wraps. Using the blanket, the horses have far less back trouble, far less irritation. Allows us to do less veterinary treatments on the horse's joints, as well as chiropractic work. And we really feel that it's been a huge improvement for us and helped us have some great results.
If you and your horse would like to experience better health and quality of life, Back on Track may be the answer that you've been looking for.
Thank you very much to Back on Track for sponsoring today's show. And we've got our next guest on the phone, and I'm very excited to kind of catch up with them. We haven't heard from them in a while. I know they've been a little bit busy, but it's Patty and Dean, I believe, is here too. They are both on the speakerphone, and they are currently on the racetrack. Is that true, Patty and Dean? Are you guys on the backside right now?
We are. We're at the barn right now with Kathy and Macho and all the horses.
Oh, how is Macho doing?
He's doing great. He just had a nice little easy work this morning, and then he walked for a while and got his bath, and now he's back in his stall waiting for breakfast to be served.
Is he a big-time eater? Does he eat like crazy?
He does eat a lot, yeah. He's put on a lot of weight, too.
Uh-oh. So
I knew he and I had something in common.
Yeah.
So since we last talked to you guys, first of all, how are y'all doing? How is everything going, and what have you guys been up to?
Well, we're doing great. This is our favorite time of year. We rented a home up here in Saratoga for the whole month of August, and we kind of moved in lock, stock, and barrel, and it's been great. We've been hanging out at the house, and it's close enough we can walk or bicycle to the barn every day. And we do that, or, you know, we walk around Saratoga. It's just so beautiful. It's a lot cooler here. It's about 10 degrees cooler than it was in Atlanta. So it's just a really enjoyable time of year where we can be around the horses every day.
Okay, Patty, I'm currently on southwestairlines.com because I am booking a flight to get out of Phoenix, Arizona in August. My God, it's horrible. So Saratoga sounds much nicer. So being in Saratoga...
I know what you mean.
Yeah, girl, I know. I grew up in Atlanta. August is the worst month there or here. The mosquitoes, the humidity. You guys are smart to get out of it for sure.
Yeah.
Being on the backside of the racetrack, if you or Dean could kind of paint a picture for our listeners, because most people that are listening have never been on the backside of a racetrack, just kind of talk a little bit about what happens there and what goes on and what you see.
Well, this is Dean. Good morning. I'll answer that
Hi,
question.
Dean.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. What they have is a lot of the barns are on the backside. It's a beautiful area with huge oak trees here, a lot of shade and grass area for the horses to kind of relax. So it's a good atmosphere for them. So they have two tracks. They have the main track and also another training track that they call Alabama. Oklahoma. Yeah. For some reason, I've got Alabama on my way.
Too long.
So, yeah, it's got my states mixed up. But anyway, they do call it Oklahoma. I'm sorry. And so the horses then each morning will go out and work on those tracks. And one unique thing about Oklahoma is it is a grass track that enables them to work their horses on the grass on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So that's an advantage to the grass horses to be able to work there. So all the horses will head out in the morning. They'll gallop, jog, some breezing, and they'll start as early as 6:30, 6 o'clock, some of them, and work all the way till 10, and because there's so many horses. And so they'll do that and then come back and walk, get their baths, and as Patty said, have breakfast.
Okay, so they actually have at Saratoga, their training track is a turf track?
Yes, it is a dirt and turf track. So those days they allow them to train on the turf, which is really nice, because if you feel like you've got a horse that may perform better on the grass, say a young two-year-old that's been working on the dirt, then you can come up here, put them on the grass, get a breeze in them, and see if they, really like the surface and improve. Then that's where you want to go in the direction you want to proceed with them.
That's amazing. I the fact that they let horses practice that, it's got to be a big advantage to turf horses, because obviously there's two different kinds of tracks, or actually three now. There's the poly track,
for our listeners, there's the polytrack, which is the synthetic surface. There's the dirt, and then there's the turf, which is when you see the horses running on beautiful grass around the racetrack. And so they're kind of stacked. The turf track is usually on the inside of the main dirt track. And it is really, you know, to be able to practice on one is very uncommon. Most people just have to work their horses on the dirt and then run them on the turf and try to figure out which one they like better. So that's a huge advantage at Saratoga. And that's pretty much where you guys have had Mucho Macho Man this whole entire time, isn't it?
Well, he spent some time down at Belmont, but then as soon as we could, we moved up here because it's much cooler. It's just a good environment for the horses to you know, stay calm, rest. They begin to eat well. They feel better. Their energy level gets up. So it's just all around good situation. And we've got some two-year-olds that we were able to put out on that turf that really improved them. And we, you know, it helped us know that that's where we need to proceed with them.
That's awesome, Dean. I got to ask you, and Patty, I want you to pay attention because I got a piece of advice for you. Dean, are you going to be shopping at the Saratoga sales right now?
Woo-hoo!
Well, we went to the sale, but we didn't buy anything, which we think is good, but it was a nice sale. We enjoyed going to it. They had a lot of great horses, top pedigrees at the sale, and I think they felt like it was a good sale, but we sort of earmarked the Keeneland sale in September that we think we can get a little more bang for our buck, and so we're gonna go to that sale.
Ah, be honest, Patty sat on your hands.
All I wanted to do was be the one to raise the hand, you know, at the auction, because it looks like so much fun to be able. But then I found out they do it really discreetly, so you never really see who.
Oh, you don't get to like wave and jump up and down.
No, but it was neat because where we were sitting up in the balcony, we could see like Bobby Flay down in the front and, you know, all the famous people that were there. We saw Bo Derek the other day at the racetrack. That was really neat.
Oh, really? Wow.
There's a lot of celebs, a lot of people here. It's really the place to see and be seen. And Dean didn't mention, but on the backside, it's so beautiful. All the barns have big pots of petunias. Hanging baskets of flowers all around the barns. And like he said, it's shady and there's big oak trees. And when you come out in the morning, it's just such a beautiful environment. We take the bicycles over and we went and bought like kind of inexpensive beach cruiser kind of bicycles with I have a big wicker basket on the front, you know, and
aww.
You come cruising in on your bicycle in the morning. It's just a really nice, wholesome environment. Really nice.
You guys sound like a couple kids out there just enjoying life. It's awesome. Now, Patty, I do want to get back to the auction thing real quick because I have bought one or two horses at an auction. Now we're not talking obviously racehorse auctions. We're talking like little teeny auctions. But the problem is that I decide I want one and then I get competitive and overly excited. And you know, and I do the wave, like the jump up and down wave, like me. And then they're like, okay, can we hear, you know, 1200. I'm like, me. And then they're like, anybody want to bid 1300? I'm like, me. I'm
yeah,
bidding against
again.
Myself.
See how
so
that
definitely
hard to get
yeah, you get too excited about it. But I was going to tell you, do not let Dean bid on a horse by Bernardini. My God.
Oh no! I told him if we want one thing, I want a Bernardini.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be bidding against the shake.
Kind
of bought them all up.
and there were some beautiful ones. Oh, they were just gorgeous. We saw some really nice ones.
Yeah, we just did a news story that they went for about $1.2 million. The highest selling was a Bernardini. So I was just protecting your pocketbook and letting you know that Bernardinis might be a little pricey. But if you want to get one, I am all for it, girl.
Well, I'm telling everybody that I was the underbidder on that horse.
But you were the underbidder on Big Brown. Tell them that.
I was. That was the first horse I was ever going to buy. I was the underbidder on Big Brown. That would have been unique to walk in there on your first horse and buy Big Brown.
Yeah, that would have been, for sure.
Now, were you going to buy him as a two-year-old or as in the yearling sales?
Big Brown is a two-year-old. We had him on our short list. We had a list of five hip numbers. He was hip number 21, which is my lucky number, and so I thought that'd be a great horse to buy. And it just went over what we thought we wanted to spend and the fact that we had three other horses after him that we were interested in. You know, you sort of think, well, I'll wait and get a better deal later. Well, it didn't work out that way.
So did you kick yourself later, like after the race? Did you kick yourself?
Oh, I've been kicking myself for 4 years over there.
Well, my friend from Hidden Brook was the consigner on that horse. They sold him, Jack Brothers, and he was definitely excited, but I think he was kicking himself that he didn't buy him back. He could have kept him.
That really shows you, though, how close it can be for you to get a really, really great horse that passes you by and you just don't know it at the time. And then you look back a year later or 2 years later and you're just like, wow, I was so close.
Yeah. And can you imagine how well Big Brown would have done under Kathy? I mean, for her to have that kind of horse.
Oh, she, yeah.
Under Patty?
Yeah, with Patty and Kathy, that horse would probably still be racing.
But let me tell you, speaking of Big Brown, one of my side things that I'm working on here, I have this brainstorm. You know how when you go, this is totally changing the topic, but when you get a manicure and a pedicure and you go to pick out your nail colors, they always have cute names, like OPI nail colors. Well, I was getting my nails done, and I saw they had all these names that pertain to, like, tennis tournaments or football and stuff like that, and I thought somebody should come up with a series called the Triple Crown series for nail polish colors, and we could have, like, for the Kentucky Derby, we could have Run for the Roses, and then we could have, like, Mint Julep, and then Dean said, ooh, yeah, and you could have brown.
Big Brown, wow, that would be a hot seller.
For fall, you know, the hot new color in nail polishes, Big Brown.
Brown.
I love it. Your ideas are phenomenal. Just tell me where to invest, and I can give you about $150. So we're in.
Oh, I think write to OPI and tell them, and then we could have for the Preakness, what was it, the Black Eyed Susan, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Patty, did I hear that you may be a little bit making progress in Georgia as far as the racing, that they're forming a commission or something? Did I hear that?
Yeah, hold on. I'll let you be.
They've got a study group that this fall they put together. They're going to take a trip up to Keeneland and try to get a lot of information so that they can come back and properly give, all the real facts to horse racing and what they can do in Georgia.
You know, and certainly Mucho Macho Man and your billboards had something to do with that. There's no doubt about it.
The billboards really got the attention of a lot of people in the Atlanta area. They were, we continue to run into people all around that really have had they know who the horse is, they remember the billboards, they've just had a great time, as a part of that. When they had Kentucky Derby parties, they were all cheering for Mucho Macho Man, and that's been a lot of fun. And we just had the thrill of a lifetime going through those Triple Crown races, and I think we needed the time off as much as Mucho Macho Man did.
Oh,
yeah, it's been a wild couple of months.
Oh, it has.
Now,
I mean, we were totally exhausted after the Belmont, and it probably worked out for everybody just to sit back and take a deep breath for, 6 to 8 weeks before we kind of got back into it. Because you're running on adrenaline for 6 months, and then suddenly, it just wears you down. I mean, we were all fighting colds and were just tired and run down, so we really needed it, but we're back in business. We're feeling real good, and Macho is just as spry as he's ever been.
Now, what race exactly, Dean, are you guys aiming for now? Or is he still on a vacation? Or are you just getting him geared up? What are you thinking?
He's starting to get back geared up in the next week or two. We're hoping that We may begin back breathing, which will help us decide about which race to go into. But if we selected one now, we've been trying to eye the Pennsylvania Derby, which is September the 24th. We think that might be a good spot for him to make another debut.
Oh, that's exciting. Oh, we can't wait. You know, we are just definitely the Mucho Macho Man station here in morning show for sure. We definitely support him. So we want to wish you guys the best of luck. We will catch up with you after the sales and as you approach the Pennsylvania Derby. We have to, because I want to know what you bought and exactly what Patty named all of them, because she named the horses. She has the best names.
Yeah, and we bought three new ones in March. And we've got an Artie Schiller that's 2 years old that's named Arthur. He was named after a family that we've known for 20 years down in the Turks and Caicos Islands. It's one of the first family we met, and he had Dolphus Arthur, and I've become great friends down there now for over 20 years. So we named that horse after that family, and then we named Miss Swanee after my stepmom, Sue. We always call her Miss Sue, and then we live in the city of Swanee, so it kind of made sense to name her Miss Swanee. And then we named our Dixie Union filly Dixie Darling, because my sister, when she talks to everybody, being very Southern, always says Darling. So those are the names we came up with, those three, and then hopefully when we buy some more in September, we can we've got a name picked out. We'll save. We won't tell you that name until we talk to you next time.
Oh my gosh, I'm going to hold you to that, because I just love your names, and my family is very Southern too. So when you said Darling, it's actually not Darling, it's Darlin. Now, did you spell it with the G or just leave the N on it?
We did, because we couldn't get the Darlin, so we went ahead and spelled it Darling properly. We generally don't say it that way, but as you know, being from the South, that's a term. Everybody's darling, hello, darling, goodbye, darling. And so we've had a lot of fun with that.
Us Southerners, Dean, we know that G is silent.
Right.
Well, you guys, thank you so much for being on with us, and we will catch up with you, and we will find out the name, we will find out about the Derby, we will find out what horses you bought and what you're going to name them. I'm excited. Thank you very much for coming on today, guys, and give Mucho Macho Man a big kiss and a carrot from us.
We will. Thanks for having us.
All right, bye, guys.
All right, thanks, Patty.
Bye-bye.
Well, they sound, God, they have, it's not bad. I could handle living a bike ride away from the track in Central New York this time of year, where it's absolutely beautiful.
Could you imagine? I mean, what a fun couple, and like a fun, youthful couple. They hop on their bicycles and, with the big, I can just imagine Patty with the big wicker
basket
pedaling through the barn.
With their carrots for Mucho Macho Man in the front.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Like, I baked you a pie. Grandma baked you a pie. Bringing it in. I can just imagine the whole thing just painting like a beautiful picture. And I'm so excited for them. They're just such nice people. And I'm so glad that they wanted to come on. I think Jennifer said they were excited to come on, excited that we still wanted to talk to them after Mucho Macho Man's Belmont run. I'm like, of course we do. Like, keep up with them.
Yeah, they're like, how we have an adopted jockey now with Callie?
Yeah.
We have our adopted jockey in training. What are they called? Bugs? We have our adopted bug. And now we have an adopted owners. We have adopted them. They're now ours. Nobody else can have them.
That's because nobody else will call us all the time.
All right, let's take a break here for our song today. And I picked this song out, and it's sponsored by FeedXL. One of the things, we always talk about FeedXL being the place to go, and you put in all the information about your horse and what you feed your horse, and it spits out all these fancy reports. But if you just want to go there to learn more about nutrition, their website is terrific. Go to feedxl.com, and you will find more information there about nutrition and feeding your horse and doing things properly. And that, even if you don't take the time, and it only takes about 5 minutes, but if you don't take the time to put in the information about your horse and to get the reports back, at least take the time to stop by there and see all of the information that's available about feeding and nutrition. They are really smart people down there. They're doctors of nutrition, of equine nutrition, that put this together. And we love dealing with them, and I think you will too. So stop by FeedXL. This song today is for Jamie because for the last couple of days, her puppies that are not puppies anymore, they're more like teenagers, have really decided that they would like to terrorize the house and chew things up. And
you know, just as you were saying that, I had to get up and go spank Boomer because he's pulling the stuffing out of his bed.
See? So this song is for you. This is to remind you, Jamie, of the days when they were just a puppy.
I am just a puppy and I'm scared to death. I am just a puppy and you light my breath. What I really need is you to love me, 'cause I'm just a puppy. I am just a kitten, so soft to the touch. With this little body, I can give so much. I fit in your hand just like a mitten, 'cause I'm just a kitten.
On command, because I figured I might as well teach him to bark since he barks all the time. Maybe if I teach him to bark, he'll stop barking for like 30 seconds in the day. Not working yet.
Of course, this is Chad. You know how we are hearing all about the dogs? It's funny how we only ever hear about Boomer. Zenyatta's the perfect little dog, and Chad's dog is the maniac.
Can I just tell you that my little Zenyatta is laying on her little bed right here, just being an absolute perfect... Oh, Boomer, don't bite her face! So he just walks up and bites her face, and she's just laying there, nice and comfortable. Boomer, you want a cookie? here we go. Now let me just give them both a cookie because they're being good. Okay. The cookie bill here in this house is ridiculous, what with all the horses and all the dogs and the husband.
Well, it is that time of day. We're going to be up with the horse.com report here in just a minute. But first, the highly anticipated, the thing everybody looks forward to. And let me check my checklist here, Jamie. Book okay. in hand?
Yes.
The page open?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Music ready? Yes, music's ready. Let me. Oh, wait a minute. Music's not ready. Now music's ready. Voice, throat cleared?
Go. Just hit it.
This is a dramatic reading by Jamie Jennings of the English classic Black Beauty by Anna Sewell.
Chapter 39, Seedy Sam. I should say that for a cab horse, I was very well off indeed. My driver was my owner, and it was in his interest to treat me well and not overwork me. Even had he not been so good a man as he was, there were a great many horses which belonged to large cab owners who let them out to their drivers for so much money a day. As the horses did not belong to these men, the only one thing they thought of was how to get their money out of them, first to pay the master, then to provide for their own living, and dreadful time some of these horses had it. Of course, I understood but little, but it was often talked over on the stand, and the governor, who was a kind-hearted man and fond of horses, would sometimes speak up if one came in very much jaded or ill-used. One day, a shabby, miserable-looking driver who went by the name of Seedy Sam brought in his horse looking dreadfully beat, and the governor said, "You and your horse look more fit for the police station than for this rank." The man flung his tattered rug over the horse, turned full round upon the governor, and said, in a voice that sounded almost desperate, "If the police have any business with the matter, it ought to be with the masters who charges so much, or with the fares that are fixed so low. If a man has to pay 18 shillings a day for the use of a cab and two horses, as many of us have to do in the season, and must make that up before we earn an extra penny for ourselves, I say 'tis more hard work. 9 shillings a day to get out of each horse, and before you begin to get your own living, you know that's true. And if the horses don't work, we must starve. And I and my children have known what that is before now. I've 6 of them, and only one earns anything. I am on the stand 14 to 16 hours a day. I haven't had a Sunday in these 10 or 12 weeks. You know, Skinner never gives me a day if he can help it. And if I don't work hard, tell me who does. I want a warm coat and a Macintosh, but with so many to feed, how can a man get it? I've had to pledge my clock a week ago to pay Skinner, and I shall never see it again." Some of the other drivers stood round nodding their heads, saying that he was right. The man went on, "You that have your own horses and cabs or drive for good masters have a chance of getting on and a chance of doing right. I haven't. We can't charge more than a 6 pence a mile at first with a 4-mile radius. This very morning I had to go a clear 6 miles and took only 3 shillings. I could not get a return fare and had to come all the way back. There's 12 miles for the horse and 3 shillings for me. After that, I had a 3-mile fare, and there were bags and boxes enough to have brought in a good many 2 pences if they had been put outside. But you know how people do. All that could be piled up inside on the front seat were put in, and 3 heavy boxes went on the top. That was the 6 pence. And the fare won, and the 6 pence I got a shilling for the return. Now that makes 18 miles for the horse and 6 shillings for me. 3 shillings still for that horse to earn, and 9 shillings for the afternoon horse before I touch a penny. Of course, it is not always as bad as that, but you know it often is. And I say 'tis a mockery to tell a man that he must not overwork his horse, for when a beast is downright tired, there's nothing but the whip that'll keep his legs a-going. And you can't help yourself. You must put your wife and children before the horse. The masters must look to that. We can't. I don't ill-use my horse for the sake of it, and none of you can say I do. There's wrong lays somewhere. Never a day's rest, never a quiet hour with the wife and children. I feel like an old man, though I'm only 45. You know how quick some of the gentry are to suspect us of cheating and overcharging. Why, they stand with their purses in their hands, counting it over to a penny, and looking at us as if we're pickpockets. I wish some of them had got to sit on my box 16 hours a day and get a living out of it, and 18 shillings beside, and that in all weathers. They would be so uncommon particular never to give us a 6 pence over or to cram all the luggage inside. Of course, some of them tip us pretty handsome now and then, or else we could not live, but you can't depend on that." The men who stood round much approved of this speech, and one of them said, "It's a desperate hard. If a man sometimes does what is wrong, it is no wonder. And if he gets a dram too much, what's to blow him up?" Jerry had to take no part in this conversation, but I never saw his face look so sad before. The governor had stood with both hands in his pockets, and now he took his handkerchief out of his hat and wiped his forehead. "You've beaten me, Sam," he said, "for it's all true, and I won't cast it upon you any more about the police. It was the look in that horse's eye that came over me. It's hard lines for a man, and it's hard lines for a beast, and who's to mend it? I don't know. But anyway, you might tell the poor beast that you were sorry to take it out on him in that way. Sometimes a kind word is all we can give them, poor brutes, and 'tis wonderful what they do understand." A few mornings after this talk, a new man came on the stand with Sam's cad. "Hello," said one, "what's up with CD Sam?" "He's ill in bed," said the man. "He was taken last night in the yard and could scarcely crawl home. His wife sent a boy this morning to say his father was in a high fever and could not get out, so I'm here instead." The next morning, the man came again. "How is Sam?" inquired the governor. "He's gone," said the man. "What? Gone? You don't mean to say he's dead?" "Just snuffed out," said the other. "He died at 4 o'clock this morning. All yesterday he was raving about Skinner having no Sundays. I never had a Sunday's rest." Those were his last words. No one spoke for a while, and then the governor said, "I tell you what, mates, this is a warning for us." And tomorrow, chapter 40, Poor Ginger.
Tom, carnage alert. Carnage alert, Tom. Just saying.
Got another dead guy.
Got another one to add to the list. I don't know what we're up to, but I'm sure Tom will be posting an update in the next day or two with the latest carnage report.
I think Tom's about to get busier in the next couple days.
All right. Pay attention, Tom. You got to listen sooner, too. You're always a day or two behind. You need to catch up. All right. It is time for...
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and Chrissy's attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
So this is the weekly horse health report from thehorse.com, and we have Christy on with us. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. How are you doing, Glenn?
I am doing fine. So I have to ask you before we get into talking about fires and things, that so I planned this vacation, and we're going away next month, and we're going to go over to the Smoky Mountains, and I'm going zip lining for the first time, and I'm so excited about it. And then I got to thinking about you going, you probably, zip lining wouldn't do much for you, having jumped out of an airplane 8,000 times. Zip lining just wouldn't do much for you, would it?
You know, I've never tried, so I guess I wouldn't know. Maybe I'll have to.
It's so controlled, and, you know.
I did kind of have that impression when I went parasailing. I will admit.
Okay, hold on. So parasailing was not thrilling and exciting to you?
Well, it's just a ride, you know. You go up. I mean, the view is great. It's a nice thing to do to see the coastline. I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when I tried that, and yeah, it was cool. But
okay.
I didn't do anything with it. You know, I can't.
Hold up, I
can't fly the parachute.
I thought I was going to die when I was parasailing, and I was terrified. I'm over the water. I hate the ocean anyway. I just like to stand on the beach. I didn't want nothing to do with it, and I was forced into it, and I thought parasailing, I'm like, this rope is going to snap. It's going to take me away into outer space, and then I'm going to drop down in the middle of the ocean and get eaten by sharks. Sharks, people. So there you go. I think zip lining
was... We got
was
sharks
like
in outer space all in the same sentence. That's awesome.
You're our hero, Christy. You are our hero.
I don't know. I think Jamie's my hero. She's got sharks in outer space.
They're from outer space, okay? I mean, duh.
All right, Christy, what are we talking about today?
Okay, so we talked a little bit about barn fires a couple of months ago, and I actually wanted to touch on it again because the conditions right now in so many parts of the country, it's super dry, it's super hot. There's wildfires, there's barn fires that are happening because it's so stinking hot. There was a fire actually not too far away from me. I'm in the Houston area yesterday morning that killed 14 Arabian, apparently really nice Arabian horses at a stable called Goslin Nix, and really hated to hear about that, of course. So I wanted to touch on it again because we want to touch on some different things. We talked to Aaron about barn fires last time, and now we have Michelle Melarano of Auburn, Maine. She's actually with Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue, and she has beaucoup experience of dealing with all kinds of equine rescues, including barn fires. And so we've got a little bit different take on it today and some tips that I think people really might want to take advantage of in their own barns. So, Michelle, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's awesome to have you here. Tell us a little bit about just barn fires in general. They're, what, the number one local emergency affecting agricultural facilities?
They are, and they kill more horses every year than any other kind of disaster. It's important to think of them as being something that affects everyone, everywhere, at any time. Really, nobody is exempt. Regardless of economic status or, location, there's no one really is exempt from it.
And they go up really fast. I mean, they're as fast as a gas fire. They tend to be.
Yeah, they are, and sometimes even faster, because if you think of a gas fire, really just the surface of the liquid is burning, whereas in a barn you have so much airspace, so much oxygen available for the fire to feed on, in between particles and the shavings, in between, hay, there's just so much fuel and oxygen available that it burns very quickly and very hot. And they say that you have about 30 seconds to get a horse out of a stall where a fire has originated before the horse is either consumed or to the point where it's damaged, lung tissues are damaged enough that it won't survive. And you have maybe 3 to 5 minutes to save horses that are in other stalls, depending on structure of the building, about 3 to 5 minutes to get other animals out of that building.
So the take-home from that is you want to do absolutely everything you can to avoid a barn fire. Not that that's not common sense, but you have no time unless you're already in the barn. I mean, if you're down the road at the house, you're just about not going to get there in time.
Right, and, most of our places have constructed barns away from our houses for that reason, to make it safer for us. But it does delay our response, and it's difficult, obviously, to enter the barn when it's involved that way. Really, it's about how structures, how the buildings are structured. We really maybe need to focus on changing the barn designs so that you have better egress for people and for animals, better suppression systems and alert systems, and easier access to the horses to get out as many as possible and, as quickly as possible.
Sure. Now, if I read some of the numbers that we were looking at last night correctly, most barn fires are very preventable, correct?
Yes. I mean, when you think about most of them are due to human error of some sort, whether that's most of them are accidental, obviously, but often due to faulty wiring, you can eliminate some of the risk there by putting all wiring in conduit, not using a large amount of extension cords. And if you have to use extension cords, use the more of the industrial-sized ones as opposed to the little ones.
You know what? I got to make a comment on that, because even at our barn where we keep our horse at the boarding stable there, when the temperature's been what they have been, around 100 degrees, you have fans on every stall, and barns aren't set up. If they were built before last 20 years, they are not set up with outlets every stall. So you have extension cords everywhere.
You do, and
I'm so glad
it's pretty
you went
scary.
There.
Yeah.
Well, you
it's
do, and I don't know how you avoid that unless you go to the expense of having your whole barn rewired. I mean, I don't know how you avoid that.
Yeah, it's difficult to avoid it because you do have to, like you said, it's 100, 110 degrees. Those animals really need some way to stay more comfortable. And if a barn has not been built with that in mind to begin with, really the only way to get around it is with some of those individual fans and, like you said, a lot of extension cords. I was just at the Kentucky Horse Park for a large horse show they're having there, and they have, I mean, they have capacity for almost 2,000 horses, and every single stall had a window box fan on it, and I couldn't believe, you know, the amount of extension cords. You can, in some cases, utilize the larger industrial fans at the ends of aisles, but it's virtually impossible in that type of a situation where, you know, many different farms and stables are coming in and individually caring for their animals. But you could use them and, you know, better utilize them in private farms.
And what if you don't use the individual fans, and of course very important if you are going to use them to keep them clean, keep the dust out of them and whatnot. But we talked a little bit about using the bigger fans, the bigger ceiling fans, the big ass fans.
Right.
Sorry, Glenn.
No problem. But the big ass fan factory is right down from our house. But, you know, it is true, and it's tough. And especially if you're boarding and you don't own the facility, then it's even tougher because you're not in charge of all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And, you know, if you're going into a boarding facility, which is, you know, it's a great point that you bring up, that's one of the things that you can ask about, certainly, if you're, you know, researching boarding facilities. Find out what their plan is regarding fires, fire suppression, how they handle those things, if they have an evacuation plan. All of those things are very important when you're trying to choose a boarding facility. You want to make sure that they have something in place where the humans and the horses are part of their plan for evacuation in any disaster, really.
And the humans should know that plan, all the humans, not just the ones who work there.
Correct.
We have quite a laundry list of tips, and some of them cover barn design, which, of course, if you're going into a barn, as we were talking about, you can't control. But some other things, like having a posted evacuation plan that we can control a little bit as far as where we go. So can you tell us a little bit about, let's just run down that list and touch on a few of those. We don't have a ton of time, but want to make sure we touch much of them.
Well, fire extinguishers obviously are one of the most important things. And not just having them, and, you know, a lot of people have fire extinguishers, but they're tucked away in a closet somewhere where no one has seen them or knows where to find them. They need to be hanging on walls in aisles, easily accessible. You need to have overhead signs that clearly mark them, and you need to check them on a regular basis. You know, egress or access to the outside for humans, if you have a very long barn of, you know, 30, 50 stalls, a lot of times there are just the end doors, and that's very difficult to get in and out of in an emergency. You need to have side exits as well. You know, one key thing that does improve your chances of getting horses out safely is to have exterior doors on every stall. Now, clearly that's an added expense, but if you do have that, you have the ability to get in from the outside without entering the structure and then sort of driving the animals out and perhaps up a fire lane to a safe enclosed paddock. Too many people think that you can sort of run down the aisle and throw the doors open for the animals to run out, but the reality of that is the animal gets fed, watered, and left alone in his stall, that's his place of safety, and he's not going to leave it even when there's fire, you know, just over his head. It's just like a kid who hides underneath his bed in an emergency or in a fire. They're scared, and that's their place of safety, and they really aren't sure what to do.
Yeah, we've read a number of reports of horses getting clear of the barn and turning around and running right back in. So important to have
exactly.
A place where you can confine the horses away from the fire trucks, away from the barn, hopefully a place where they've got something to snack on to settle them down a little bit. All
exactly.
Right, so there are a number of other things on this list that I thought were really good. We touched a little bit on the doors within, 30 meters of any point of the building to make it easier to get out so you're not running down that long barn aisle.
Right.
Updated electrical wiring, using only UL-listed appliances such as your fans, minimal extension cords, caging light fixtures so that horses can't reach them, break the bulbs. Obviously, injury hazard there as well as a, a fire hazard. One thing that I actually hadn't heard before, which makes all kinds of sense, is having your breaker box or some sort of main power shut off near an external a way to get out of the barn so that people can shut down the power if there's an electrical fire going on. Get
exactly.
It started.
Yeah. Or the fire department can, you know, has access to that as well.
Sure.
Without having to enter the structure and you know, hunting for it.
And this one I thought was good for, excuse me, with the risk that we've got a wildfires right now, especially down in Texas where it's dry as a bone. The recommendation is a 33-meter, called defensible space around the barn.
Right. So you don't want your tractors parked alongside the barn. You know, those are just additional things that can catch fire and increase the size of the fire. Too often you'll see horse trailers and trucks parked alongside or hay stacked nearby. You know, all kinds of additional things that just can get involved in that fire and increase it to the point of no return, really.
Sure.
You know, talk about some of the things that you can do prior to. If you're building a new place, one of the most important things is to include sprinkler systems and, you know, or some other sort of fire suppression or detections. We have smoke alarms in our houses, but those really aren't good enough in barns. They get really rendered useless with all of the particulate matter. There's so much dust, and too often they start beeping and we just take the battery out because they're not working anymore. It's too dusty. You really need some sort of a main wired system or, the rate of rise detectors that tell you about, you know, heat and, other types of detectors that are more specific than just the smoke detectors.
Right, and those smoke detectors are not even always effective in repoed houses. I'm just saying, where everything's been really dirty.
Exactly. Right. Right.
Not from experience or anything.
No, that's true.
Okay, we talked a little bit last time as well about having halters and leads at each stall, but you and I talked a little bit about the materials of the halters and leads as well, that
yes.
Nylon can be a problem.
The nylon will melt very quickly, and it can, if it hasn't melted already while it's hanging on the door, it can melt on once you have it on the horse's head. The leather will be a bit better choice, obviously a bit more expensive, but in some cases it's you'll have better luck with those. And lead
sure.
lines, of course, as well. You know, the cotton ones are, depending on, you know, or leather, the leather's just going to be a better choice. It's going to hold up better. Of course, if it's that hot, you're probably not going to be able to put your hands on any of it.
Sure. Now, in the situation where you do have a barn fire, you're saying everything's gotten very hot. One thing I was reading in Rebecca's report yesterday is that to hose the horses down immediately, which may seem like, you know, you want to put the horse out in the pasture and go get other horses if you can, if you've even got any time. But there's a case report, I believe, of some horses that had some burning embers that had fallen on them, and it sounded like they must have had big woolly winter coats because they didn't even realize that the horses still had embers burning their skin in their coats.
Right.
They didn't see them, and they ended up with some really bad burns from that. So
that was
another tip that I got out of that report that I thought was really valuable, to immediately hose the horses from nose to tail and, of course, get the vet out. That's obvious.
Yeah, exactly. And even if everybody looks okay, you really don't know what kind of internal damage they have from, you know, inhaling not just smoke, but the other chemicals that are very toxic. So you really need some, you know, immediate assessment of the animals, getting the vet out. Even in a small fire, if you think you've contained it, and you've gotten all the horses out, you know, a week, 10 days later, you can start seeing some health issues in your animals that you didn't previously detect if you haven't had them really well assessed by a veterinarian.
And another point is to make sure that the fire really is out. If you've got a small one that you believe you've been able to contain, that if the water doesn't get to absolutely every part of the fire, or they can flare back up later, and that, of course, not something
correct.
You want to do
yeah.
with either.
Especially if it's a fire that's originated in hay, because if you put hay up that's not entirely cured, if there's a bit of moisture in there that is causing it to go bad, once you you know, you, I mean, you could have several areas of a hay pile that's been stacked in a barn or wherever your storage area is, and it could be several hot spots. You could sort of manage one in a smaller manner, but then have a larger problem later on. But actually, just wanted to go back to one quick point that we haven't touched on, actually, is one thing that you can do for more on the planning end is to call your local fire department and get several of the firefighters to come out to your particular barn and do sort of a mutual education afternoon with them. Take a couple of hours, have them walk through your facility and identify either some fire hazard areas, talk about proper egress, talk about property accessibility. I've seen some places that have great planning and great prevention with sprinkler systems and great evacuation plans, but then they have limited accessibility with a narrow road going to their barn or a gate that you know the fire department can't get through. So have them look at all of those things to find out how easily and effectively they can access the property. Have them look at those hazard areas, and then you take the time to educate them on horse behavior, some horse handling, how they can help you if there's an event on your property, how they can help you with the animals, and making sure that everybody's working in the same, you know, with the same goal in mind. That will
and you'd like to
make it
oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Much easier. That'll make it much easier for them to respond to an incident at your facility. They'll be much more familiar with your property and your buildings and where things are. If they know the hay is in one barn and they know that's just the hay barn, but the horses are in a barn right next to it, they can concentrate on keeping the animals safe or helping with the evacuation of the animals and fighting, you know, the hay, not worrying about burning the burning hay, but worrying about burning animals. They'll be much more familiar and have a much better response and evacuation plans with you. That mutual education is very important.
Right. It never hurts to make friends with the fire department, ever, especially
exactly.
If you're in a rural area.
Right.
I think so. Well, we've got another little bit of information that Glenn I will post here on the Facebook page in a moment.
Okay.
Rebecca Jimenez, who's, you may remember she was going to be on the show a little while ago. We had a little scheduling issue, but she sent us a video called What It's Like Inside a Barn Fire, and I think that's something that everybody really needs to see. I'll post that up there in just a few minutes.
Okay.
But I know we need to wrap up here. But,
well, and I was going to say, you know, we've talked about barn fires a couple of times and prevention, but I have to congratulate you both. I think this is the best discussion we've had yet.
Oh, great. Thank you very much.
Yay.
I really do.
I appreciate that. Well,
yeah.
It's
she
so
can,
important.
You know, not only can she skydive, and is she a daredevil, she's pretty good at this radio hosting thing, too.
I'm trying to learn from the best.
Why are you on
Where
our
are
show?
They?
Yeah.
Who's that? Come on.
We can recommend somebody else if you're really good.
Yeah. Give them. Can we get their number so we can talk to them too?
You guys, thanks so much. You guys are awesome.
Being on. Yeah,
and Michelle, is there a website for you? I know you're with the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue Assistant Instructor, but is there a website for you or not?
Actually, you can access me through the TLAER.org website.
Okay.
That is the Technical Large Animal Emergency Rescue site, and there's an amazing amount of information there, including a large section on fire incidents.
Okay, cool. And, of course, thehorse.com.
Please. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Christy. Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks for
you
having
too.
Me. Bye-bye.
So that was actually the best fire talk I think we've had. I think that there was some really good information in there.
You know, thank God that they can make this show real, because I sit here and talk about sharks and outer space and flying away and the parasailing, and they just skip right over me and get serious and provide information. I'm so glad that there's – see, that's why we book guests like thehorse.com, because they actually bring real information to our listening audience, and we do appreciate it. So,
and, you know, and then we have Amy in Philadelphia. By the way, we're going to be in Philadelphia, Amy, starting Friday. We have our listener, Amy, in Philadelphia, who says, I'm not sure about sharks from outer space, but dolphins sure are. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, anyone? Maybe Jamie's next read on the show. I vote for that. I vote for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'm with you, Amy. I'm with you on that one. So our listeners just encourage the silliness. See, that's part of the problem. It's not just
yeah,
us.
You make a good point. There are people who do get mad when we don't provide information. So we have to, you know, we have to please everybody.
Well, you know, and then Karen types in on the question of the day. By the way, thank you for everybody for typing in on that. And she says, I'm one of them that will take any suggestion as a way to learn. I read major magazines, sign up for email newsletters, and ask a lot of questions, attend clinics. But last but not least, listen to Horses in the Morning for advice and instruction. Well, Karen, there's your first mistake. Let me put out a disclaimer right now. It's a good opportunity to do that. I should have music there behind this. If anyone is listening to this show for advice or instruction, please accept it from the guests and not from the hosts. Just saying.
Glenn, that's not fair. That's not fair, because just this morning on this very show, I told you about going to see a horse, and you learned if your horse is running backwards, make sure your bit is not a snaffle with an 8-inch shank in the mouth backwards. See,
that's
so
true. Okay.
I did provide some information and some education this morning to everybody out there, I feel satisfied. What have you done today?
And we have to exclude Jennifer, Coach Jen, who knows everything about anything, and you really can accept her. So we have to exclude her from this conversation, too.
Yeah.
So pretty much anything I say, you can discount.
That's what you do. That is what you do, my friend. Well, thanks, everybody, for answering the question of the day. How do you handle those situations where you meet a horse or owner, a rider, who is just clueless? And I did like the suggestions, you know, suggesting a trainer, you know, just help anybody that helps them, although that can kind of sometimes, in my opinion, come across as asserting yourself and their opinion. But if it's a dangerous situation, like Karen said, you know, or like Katie said, then definitely, you know, step in there and help them. So it kind of was like most people just said, go for it. Tell them what you think.
And I do have news from our earlier conversation and today. Katie Murphy, our couple, see, they're sort of our adopted engaged couple. Well, soon to be engaged couple. They're our adopted dating couple, and we're hoping soon to be engaged couple if they can ever settle on a ring. And she did get a hold of us, and she forgot her phone today, sadly, or she would have called in. She is going to call in tomorrow morning first thing. So you can give your sage advice tomorrow morning first thing to Katie. Yeah, you'll be happy to know.
Unfortunately, it's not going to be the most encouraging of advice. Run away, Katie. Just run to Vegas, baby.
We have a relative that I found out yesterday. They've been living together for a long time. And all of a sudden, I get this invitation for a wedding yesterday that's on Monday.
Oh, my God. What?
This coming Monday. And the invitation was by Facebook. I've never gotten a wedding invitation by Facebook before.
Oh,
and it's at the courthouse on Monday. So, I guess they decided that for whatever reason, they need to get married on Monday. So we won't be able to make that one, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's just a little too tacky. your Facebook invite. See, what not to do, Katie, unless you don't want anybody to come, send a Facebook message 2 or 3 days out. Perfect.
Well, that might be the plan, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
it sure reduces the food bill at the reception after.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm telling you, run away to Vegas and just have everybody mail you a check. It's a great call.
What else was there? Let's see here. Was there anything else we had to cover that was needed to be done today? I got a couple stories we can do tomorrow that are kind of funny. But those can wait till tomorrow. And I think that's about it. Don't forget to take a look at that video that we posted earlier in the day that Jamie found. That was terrific. A good video.
Oh, ridiculous. Hey, just so you know, I'm about to head out to a riding lesson with my horse, Jet, and we worked on trailer loading yesterday. And I actually did my little trailer loading exercise that I learned from kind of a combination of doing my online certification and Clinton Anderson, a little bit of both. And the big horse from Fresno, the one that we bought, that big white horse, he will not load in a trailer, but he did by the end of the day. And my horse Jet put up the worst fight of all time. And I am so sore that I don't know. First of all, hopefully he'll load because he got his little butt kicked yesterday in the whole loading process. But my God, he was terrible, but I did get him on and off and on and off and on and off and on and off. So hopefully I'll be loading him up here in just a minute to go to my riding lesson. We shall see.
Maybe Jet it'll is work. Always full of surprises for you.
Every day. It's a different horse. Every single day.
You would end up with one that was like that, though.
I think
you thrive on that.
Tomorrow, I'll tell you what he did to Jose. I didn't find out about this until yesterday.
The barn sitter?
Yes. Jose the farm sitter has a story about Jet.
Tell me, is Jose coming back again?
I actually ended up having to pay Jose considerably more than I had told him.
All right, everybody.
I know I told you this much here. Just take all of it. Just think, between Boomer and Jet, I had to pay him double.
Don't forget, everybody, you can find us on iTunes. You can download us there. Just search for Horses in the Morning and subscribe. It'll automatically come to your iTunes every time you open it up. You'll be updated. Don't forget now that the new player that you'll find on our website, you click and the little window opens up with the player. You can listen to 5 past episodes on there now, which is kind of nice, little thing that we put together for you. And also, all the shows are coming out a little early this week for the Horse Radio Network, so a lot of them are out already. You can find all of those at horseradionetwork.com. We'll be back tomorrow morning live, and then we'll have a recorded show for you on Friday, and we will be over the weekend in Philadelphia together for a change, and I'm so looking forward to seeing you again, Jamie.
Me too, and that just makes me think of one thing. Spay, neuter, and geld. Have a nice day, people.
All right, and maybe I should use my new closing when we're actually going to be getting together.
Maybe, see you, Peelers!
See you, Peelers, Jamie!